Hello, is everyone back?
This is Marta. I'm back.
Hi, Marta.
Who's this?
This is Scott Carley here.
Hey, Scott.
Host today. And I just wanted to welcome everyone to our regular Tuesday call. It's January the 28th, 2014. And as some of you probably saw in the announcement for this presentation on this call, Tamara and Frank and some of our usual members are actually at the conference that the National Council for Science and Education, or Science and the Environment, try to get the right acronym. So they will be listening to us, I hope, later and won't be joining us today. And I'm actually hoping that they will be able to give us a report next week. And in that regard, and I'm just taking my prerogative as co-host today to jump right into announcements, but I just wanted to make sure that since I'm talking about that conference, that people look for the email that David Blockstein sent out on the 27th. That was yesterday. And in fact, several of the events associated with the conference, which is called Building Climate Solutions, several of those events are actually going to be webcast courtesy of Climate Nexus. And in fact, the very first one is after this call, directly after it, at 2 o'clock Eastern, Building the Climate Change Education and Communication Collective. It's a symposium. And later in the day is a keynote from Catherine Sullivan. Tomorrow, Jim Hansen is talking, looks like in the evening on Wednesday, and on Thursday, Gina McCarthy from EPA, and actually looks like Right Honorable John Gummer from the UK, the chair of the Climate Change Committee in the UK, is also going to be speaking, and that's on Thursday, and that's in the morning. So anyway, I hope you got that email. It was sent out to the whole listserv, and so that will give you a little sense of what some of our members are up to, and I hope we get a report from them next week. So those are some announcements. Has anyone else any other announcements? Things are quiet, are they? Well, if there are no announcements, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that we have. Oh, I could mention, and again, you may not have seen this on our schedule, we are planning on doing a presentation on February the 11th related to the North American Association for Environmental Education and their work on a grant that one of our frequent members, Karen Hallwood, particularly, I think Bora Simmons was also deeply involved in this. They produced some very interesting materials. Let me see if I can very quickly get the actual title of this, since I actually have it up on my website. It's a, of course, I'm not going to find it quickly. I can't find it, but this is a an e-publication that just went out, I think, last week, and they will be presenting on the content of that, and it should be very interesting to folks here, since it's deeply involved in climate change education and some of the resources that are available for teachers and a little bit of learning theory and a whole slew of things. So there's a really nice piece of work that a group has done over the last couple of months. So Karen and some other colleagues of hers will be presenting on that on the 11th of February. So that's a little bit of a teaser for an upcoming program on this call. So, did anyone think of the other announcements?
Yeah, Scott, this is Marta. Since you're doing teasers, I'll do teaser.
No, we're fine.
EcoArt Space, which is a international organization that promotes the work of artists that are looking at environmental issues. And they've now developed this action guide series, and they just launched the first one. And it's Eve Mosier, who is an artist in New York City, in Manhattan. It's called the High Water Line, I think, and it's just simply, do you know that one? It's just drawing a line around Manhattan and the Bronx to look at how high the sea level rise will be. And so they're creating this action guide that will be a template that then can be used all over the world. And so I can, when I find out a little bit more, I can send it to everybody if there's interest. It's really exciting because this whole program that they're doing is engaging artists and also very simple ways of explaining and participatory ways for getting communities to think about climate change in new ways. So I'll send it around.
Well, thanks, Marta.
Sure.
Hi, this is Jimmy Betts. I'm Education Director for the Great Climate March.
Yes, that's great, Jimmy.
And I've never called in before.
Great, welcome.
Oh.
Did you want to do a little
thanks.
Promo for the march? Is there any information that you want to pass on about it?
Sure. I didn't know the etiquette, so I didn't really know where to start talking.
A two-minute promo is just fine.
Okay. Well, actually, just to piggyback off of the artist out of New York, we're actually considering finding out how we can incorporate some of that into places along the march, including outside of L.A. If there's any additional information in terms of getting in touch with them, we'll look forward to seeing that as well. But I guess announcement-wise, we do have our official kickoff and rally event out of Wilmington, Los Angeles, California, on March 1st. And I believe there's an official Facebook event, and I can probably provide those links to whoever or however that's done through the Clean Network, too. But just the official announcement. And, we're getting ready to go. So
that's great. Thanks, Jimmy. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Well, I think we should shift into our presentation. And as people know, Leah Wasser from the NEON Project is going to talk today about the NEON Project and its use in our classrooms. So, Leah, without further ado, please jump in. And I'll just ask you if you can just let people know when you change slides, just sort of what number slide that is, so we can follow along.
Sure.
So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you all. I'm really excited to be here today over the phone, of course, and to talk to you a little bit about the NEON Project. As Scott said, my name is Leah Wasser, and I work at the National Ecological Observatory Network, known as NEON. We're a NSF-funded observatory, and we'll be collecting data over the next 30 years to support scientific research and education in the area generally of ecological change. And I'll tell you a little bit about that and just a little bit more about that in just a moment. My position at NEON, I'm in the education department. I have a background in remote sensing ecology, a degree from Penn State. And I'm actually developing our university program. And what that means is some of the materials that will be used to support scientists and students using our data. And without further ado, I'm going to move on to the next slide of my presentation. Now, I have a lot of slides, but don't worry. they're going to go quick. There's a lot of images and just kind of supporting transitional slides, so don't be intimidated by the 49 slides that you see in the PDF. And also, please feel free to stop me as I'm talking if you have particular questions. I'd like for this to be informal. I know that that's challenging over the phone, but I welcome any questions or comments as I go. So moving on, slide two is just we're located in Boulder, Colorado. So I'm on slide three. So NEON's a continental scale ecology observatory, and so we're, again, funded by the NSF. We'll have 30 years of data, and the goal of NEON is to be provide infrastructure and backbone for research and education. So all of our resources will be available, no charge to the community to use. Our main interface is our website, which we're developing actually as I speak, and the project itself is in construction. So you see there's a timeline at the bottom of the screen there. We started conceptual design back in the early, around 2004, and right now we're in the build-out phase where we're actually constructing the sites that will be collecting data across the country. And then we begin operations in 2017 and we'll run for the full 30 years. And what's really unique about NEON and really exciting to me as an educator is that the education component was explicitly designed into the NEON project. And so developing resources to support the use of the data is a really important component of the project. So moving on to slide 4, you can see a map of the NEON sites. We have sites across the country located in 20 eco-climatic domains. So those are areas that have that are similar in terms of their physical, biological conditions. And we have different types of sites. So we have 20 domains. There's a core site in each domain, which will collect data for the full 30 years. We have relocatable sites in the domains that are that will be that will change in their location and may be in a particular location from anywhere between 5 to 10 years, that are focused on tracking particular disturbance regimes, be it development or some other type of identified ecological disturbance or anthropogenic disturbance. Some of our sites associated with the core sites are aquatic, and so in those sites we'll have stream and lake data streaming from the sites, and also observational data, vegetation, organismal level data as well. So you can see the distribution of our sites across the entire United States. I'm going to move on to slide 5. So we're a continental scale observatory, and that means that essentially our sites are located in a way that was strategic to capture variability across the country, but also that was strategic in terms of cost, and so we couldn't have sites everywhere. And so there is a geostatistical model involved with locating the sites across the country that's really important to NEON's design. Moving on to slide 6, you see an image of what a NEON site, a NEON core site looks like. So there's a tower that collects atmospheric data, flux measurements. You can see people kind of sampling on the ground, collecting different information about vegetation, organismal information, soils data. So there's a really broad suite of data that's collected at each NEON site for the full 30 years. And, oh, my thing just skipped on me. Okay, moving to slide 7. Our data that we collect spans from individual organisms, so insects and beetles. Slide 8, to biological sampling. Moving on to slide 9, to sensor-based data collection. Here's one of our towers located in Sterling. We have towers at all of our core sites. Moving on to slide 10, we also have an airborne remote sensing platform, and so that platform will fly all of our core and some of our aquatic sites every year for the course for the duration of the project, and collecting LIDAR data, some hyperspectral data, and then imagery. So we have a whole suite of remote sensing data products associated with that platform. Moving on to slide 11, the idea with NEON, the bigger picture of NEON, is that we have a range, a breadth of measurements, and a depth of temporal scale of measurements. And so we're collecting data, so the data can be scaled from site to region, ultimately to a continental scale, and it can be used accordingly in different ways depending on how the community sees fit. And so you can kind of see that in this image. The satellite part of the image, we don't actually have a satellite. That's a common question that we get. But part of the NEON data product suite that will be offered to the community are processed existing satellite-derived data sets, like the National Land Cover data set. And they'll be processed in a way that it'll be simpler to be able to take those data and couple them with the NEON data products and use them together in the same types of formats, same types of projections, and so on. So the idea is to really facilitate the use of different types of data across scales. Moving on to slide 12, the breadth of the types of sampling that we will do at our sites ranges from terrestrial to aquatic to atmosphere to airborne, and then those national data sets are the satellite-derived data sets that I mentioned, like the land cover, and also some data such as census data, that all will be available through our website, through our data portal, in formats that are usable and comparable amongst data types. And ideally, we're working on developing a data portal that's really accessible to the community and hopefully will be as easy to use as possible. And that's a process we're involved in, developing that data portal now. So slide 13, all of this, the spatial component, the distributed sites, the breadth of measurements, that all makes up the NEON project, which is a continental scale observation system. And again, all of our resources are available to everyone at no cost through our website, or they will be. And so slide 14, just to kind of summarize the things that we offer in terms of the project, free data again. We also have what's called assignable assets, or infrastructure that scientists can choose to use. So for example, a researcher could propose to use the airborne platform to fly a particular area that they're interested in, and they can submit that proposal. Or a student could propose potentially to add a particular sensor to one of our towers and do some additional observations that way. So our infrastructure is also available for use in that way. Educators can also use our NEON data as they see fit in the classroom. And part of what I'm working on and what I'm going to be talking to you about is that packaging of data sets in a way that really facilitates the use, so it doesn't become overwhelming to an educator to try to pull that into the classroom. And my focus really is the higher education, so that university level. But we do have, we will have programs for K-12 as well here at NEON. And then students can apply for internships, which we have run our first internship program last summer. And we're running the second round of that this summer, and in the future we're going to have an RU program. And slide 15, NEON has an education focus, as I mentioned earlier. That's what's really unique about this project, is education was explicitly built into the NEON project, and that ranges from citizen science to professional development to other public engagement activities. So we really have a broad education program that we're just building right now, which is why it's really exciting to kind of connect with the CLEAN Network, because we're very open to input in terms of what needs the community might have, or ideas in terms of things that we could potentially develop that would be really useful, or opportunities to work with other efforts out there that are developing useful materials for to use in the classroom. And so slide 16, just moving into what I'm really here to talk to you about today. So that's the overview, nutshell story of what the NEON project is. My job here at NEON is to develop our university program. So I'm just going to give you a little snapshot of what I'm thinking right now. And I'm really open to your feedback and input, because really I'm just starting to build this program. We're working on this now. And so there's a lot of opportunity to go in a lot of different directions, which is really exciting. So slide 17, focusing on that portion of the NEON design that's about higher education, starts with, of course, the fact that we have all this great data that are going to be available for free to use, and that's a really exciting opportunity, but also potentially daunting to educators to have to sort through all of that. So how can we package it in meaningful ways that's accessible and really useful from a learning perspective? Some of the program is going to include online learning modules. So this would be those pre-packaged data sets associated with a set of learning objectives. And those learning objectives may span from just understanding how to work with newer, bigger types of data sets that span space and time. There's different types of tools associated with working with these data sets that might be a little bit more complex than some of the more widely used methods, say things like Excel spreadsheets, may not always cut it in terms of working with these data sets. Can we expose students to different types of processing techniques and data formats and support gaining comfort in those types of topics so that the next generation feels more comfortable with using these newer data sets, these larger data sets. Part of our program includes an undergraduate research experience, which we haven't developed yet, but that will be, again, in the future development of our education program, the internship program, which I mentioned, graduate and field analysis course, which is in the future development as well. We'll have postdocs. We've had a few already, but we'll have a formal program at some point in the future before 2017. And then, of course, workshops and seminars will be part of our program as well. So we have a pretty wide range or suite of programs that will become the NEON Education Program when we're in operations, which is 2017, which really isn't that far away. So moving on to the next slide here. Lost my place again. So slide 18. The university program, some just large picture goals. One, to really facilitate the use of our data in the classroom. And so this facilitation is what I'm going to focus the most on today. And I see this as being a mixture, a modular approach of different types of resources that can be used in different ways. And I'll tell you what I mean by that in just a moment. But the idea that we might hold workshops, but maybe only so many people can go to those workshops. But we have online materials in the form of graphics that support, that convey key concepts, key data concepts, key science concepts that could be used in a classroom by another graduate student teaching the topic, to package data that could be brought into the classroom. So different types of pieces that could be put together into useful lessons and activities in the classroom is essentially the idea for that first goal there. And then number two, training the next generation of scientists. And so this is where the workshops and the graduate course and the internship and the RU really comes into play. Can we capture some of those scientists, some of those up-and-coming scientists, and engage them in working with big data and to understand ecological change? And so that's the second goal. Providing real-world experiences is the third, and so that's our internship program in the REU. And then the fourth is just bringing attention to some of the NEON-relevant science topics. So we've been working on actively organizing sessions at conferences like, say, AGU and ESA, to bring attention to some of these resources that will be available and also particular science topics that could be supported by using these data resources. So slide 19, the university program overview. The first piece of that is the online education, and that's going to be our educator portal, which we're calling it, and we're developing that right now. And that's going to be an online space that will have what we're calling education modules or materials that facilitate the use of data in the classroom. And the part that I've been really working on are these short YouTube-style videos that you could watch. And when I say you, I see the audience ranging, being a scientifically literate audience, but ranging from potentially undergraduates all the way through early career scientists and beyond. So kind of trying to capture the interest of an audience in a more social media format through YouTube, because there's been a lot of really successful science feeds on YouTube, for example, Minute Physics and Minute Earth, that have done a really good job in distilling pretty complex ideas into enjoyable videos that teach you something. And so we're exploring that right now to see what we can produce, and also with the idea that some of the pieces of those videos, be they animations and graphics, might be equally useful to educators, because maybe they're teaching a particular topic and they just want that animation or that 10-second video clip or that graphic that explains that concept very clearly. So our idea with the educator portal is that it becomes a pool of resources And potentially down the road, we would hope that potentially the external community might be able to contribute to those resources as well, and use them as they see fit. Workshops and webinars, that's another thing on the immediate horizon. We're planning a workshop at the ESA conference in August, a data-focused workshop, and then hopefully another one in the fall, and we're working those details out now. Again, our internship program we're running this summer, and the conference sessions, we had two at AGU this past 2013 in December. Moving on to slide 20. So all of these pieces may seem very separate, but I see them as kind of painting the bigger picture of the Neon University program because, for example, the short videos could be used as key components in a graduate course because maybe those are resources that students watch ahead of time and then they come to the classroom and work on a particular activity with the background that they need. So maybe they forego the lecture component and kind of absorb that at home on their own time. The online modules as well, we see all the pieces that we build as potentially being put together in different ways. So if we have a suite of videos on a particular topic, say vegetation change, those coupled with a data set that's been distilled down to a size that's easy enough to work with could become an activity that is integrated into an ecology lab. Similarly, a lot of these pieces will support workshops that we do. And so all of these pieces we see as fitting together and supporting each other and becoming a community resource that anyone that wants to can kind of go and use. So slide 21, just a really brief overview of the internship program. I'm going to move to slide 22. We did that last year, and it was really quite successful. We had four interns, and each of them had mentors within the Neon team, the Neon project team. And moving on to slide 23, the idea with the internship program, again, is that each student had a real-world project related to, in this case, the construction of the Neon project. They had mentorship here at Neon, so they were actually housed in Boulder, Colorado, and they had this opportunity to kind of explore career options and figure out, is this the type of path that they're interested in, or what are their interests? And then, of course, the things that they worked on were real-world types of projects, and so those contributed to their resume building. And then we had an evaluation component at the end of that where we looked at what worked and what didn't, and then when we implement again this year, we can make some adjustments as necessary. And Liz Gehring here at Neon runs this internship program, and she's done a really great job. So if anyone has questions specifically on that, I'd be happy to direct you to Liz if you have more questions. So the online learning component, the educator portal, that's slide 24, and then I'm going to jump to 25. Here. The idea with the educator portal, so while the internship program, you know, we're limited because there's funding associated with that and we can only support so many students given our staff here, whereas the online learning program, you know, anyone can use these resources and the idea is that it'll capture a broader audience. And so the goals associated with that are, again, facilitating the skills needed to work with these big data sets, because that's essentially what Neon's offering, and to just engage a broader community in working with Neon data in general. So slide 26, this idea that we have so many different types of data and where do you start, and that could be really overwhelming coming into the Neon portal as an educator. And so figuring out how to distill that down into bite-sized pieces is a big part of what I'm going to be working on. Slide 27. So this notion of big data, these massive amounts of data, are just not typically handled by the usual data tools. So there's a lot of expertise in programs like Excel, which are your very useful spreadsheet tools, but they might not be capable of handling these big volumes of data. And so what that means is that we need to think about different ways of teaching our students and different tools that are out there to make sure that they have the capacity to work with these new, bigger data sets that are becoming more readily available. And so being aware of that, slide 28, it ain't easy being big. So how do we deal with this challenge and make sure that we don't have a lot of frustrated students in the classroom? So the goal with NEON is developing some tools that will pave the way for working with some of these data sets. So these might be things like scripts in R that are already packaged and ready to run with particular data sets to just begin to support working with tools that might be unfamiliar. Having or supporting a better understanding of what types of computing resources you might need to process bigger data sets, and then how can you work around some of the challenges associated with maybe you don't have quite the memory that you need to work with that data set. Well, there are workarounds to that, and just teaching some of those skills will be really important. Moving on to slide 29. The really exciting and simultaneously daunting part of this whole process is that NEON is a free and open science project. So what that means is that all of our algorithms are available to the public, all of our protocols, everything that we do is open access and freely available. And so as such, we also want to really look at open source tools for data analysis to make sure that there's no barrier to people working, to everyone working with our data to the extent that we can. Of course, there's some limitations, but there is a wealth of free tools out there like R, which is a really common one, Python, there's QGIS, Quantum GIS. In the remote sensing world, there are several, Fusion and Optics, and I'm missing a bunch on this slide, but the point of this, and this is slide 29, is that there's a lot of tools out there, and where do you start? And that in and of itself can be a really daunting challenge. So we hope in some of our packaging to provide some of that path towards just getting started and understanding what's out there, and hopefully some of the workshops will also cover similar topics. So slide 30 is just this idea that it can be quite a headache and potentially a bit daunting to get started. But once you dive in, there's a lot of opportunity. And so hopefully that we hope to kind of engage and excite more than intimidate in our materials. And that's going to be a real challenge to do. And I'm really looking forward to any feedback or comments any of you have on that particular topic. And so slide 31. Some of the challenges with integrating into the classroom, a lot of universities don't have in ecology programs explicit data analysis work like as a part of their core curriculum. Some do and some don't, but are there ways that we can facilitate some of those elements in the classroom through just offering materials that are prepackaged and ready to be used? And so they don't, there's less of the having to sort through everything that's out there in terms of being able to integrate, you know, something into an afternoon ecology lab working with big data. And some of these bullet points are just some of the challenges associated with thinking about classroom integration, everything from all the different data formats out there to managing the data and understanding the metadata and storing the data. So there's all these kind of compounding issues that need to be considered and addressed. So NEON's approach, slide 32, is a modular approach. And so, again, all these different pieces that we build, we hope can be put together in different ways by the community depending on how they want to use them. And we also are going a multimedia route, so developing things that are more visually engaging, and hopefully we can capture a wider audience through that particular route. And in the future, I hope to be able to share with you some of the videos that we've been working on. And I'm really excited about them because we want to get people excited about our data, and we want students to be excited about working with it. And then, of course, this notion of making sure that everything that we do is open source and that there's supporting science associated with it. So we're not just doing data analysis activities that we've pulled out of the air, but there's some real-world applications of people working with data in that particular way, and the students are actually getting an actual applied experience by working through a particular activity. So slide 33, these are just some of the types of topics that we're going to consider exploring, and we might have a lot of other different types of topics, but this was just kind of a brainstorm. So some of the topics are very data-specific, things like metadata and processing methods, and some of the topics are obviously related to ecology, and so fusing the different elements of data, data analysis, data types, with the science, the ecology, is going to be a really key part of the types of resources that we create. And so slide 34 just begins to explore the types of topics that we might have. So for example, if we had a land cover, land use type of theme, we might have a theme for a particular activity on vegetation change. And so the question might be, you know, looking at a particular structural characteristic of, say, a forest, and how do you begin to do that type of analysis? Well, maybe you would use some sort of remote sensing data like LIDAR, and so that might be a particular topic that could be explored through one of our activities, and that would be coupled with some data that you could analyze and some background material to help a student or an early career scientist understand where the data came from and what they're actually measuring. And that's actually something we're going to be looking at in our ESA workshop in August as a topic. And so slide 35, if you imagine that particular activity of looking at forest structures, say tree height, and how, say, LIDAR-derived tree height compares to tree height as measured in the field, maybe there's a package associated with that that has some introduction videos about LIDAR data, has a demo on working with the data, some kind of data analysis activity, and then some kind of wrap-up. So all those pieces might be packaged together, but at the same time, if you wanted to use them in a different way, you could as well, because all of it will be available on our portal. So maybe, you know, an instructor just wants the students to watch the intro videos, but they have their own ideas for the type of analysis activity they want to do. So we envision everything that we create as kind of this modular approach that could be used in a lot of different ways, but we might begin the conversation by suggesting some ways to package the data. And so slides 36 and 37 are just, well, why modular? Simply put, we know things change, sensors change, data collection methods and analysis methods change. So we want to really have flexibility, given NEON's going to be around for 30 years. So we think maybe a couple of things might end up changing on us along the way. And slide 38 is just a little glimpse of some of the graphics we've been developing. So that's actually an animation, so slide 38, of how a laser would scan through a forest, and you would get resultant points if you were using discrete return LIDAR data. And this is part of one of the LIDAR videos that I've been working on. And so these would be the types of graphics that you would be able to download. You could download the animation, or you could watch the entire video, depending on how you wanted to use the information. And slide 39 is just another example. This is a data-specific example. So how do you go from, you know, LIDAR data points to, say, an elevation model. And so how do you take each point, convert it to a cell to create a raster digital elevation model? That would be a very useful lesson for students to understand. It's also a topic that's taught in GIS classes and all kinds of other types of applications. So maybe people are just interested in the graphics, or maybe they're interested in the entire video and lesson. And these are the types of things that we would offer on our portal. Slide 40, just another graphic, understanding the connection between that digital elevation model with all the bright colors representing different elevation values and what's actually out there on the ground. So that's getting to that idea of remote sensing and how you begin to capture information over large areas and how that relates to what's actually out there. Slide 41, just another example of taking a particular concept, again associated with LIDAR, and showing it graphically. So just dealing with the intensity or how much light is being reflected back to the LIDAR sensor. Slide 42, just another screenshot. This is a software package called Fusion. It's open source and free, available from the Forest Service, which makes it a really great tool that anyone can download. Unfortunately, this particular one is Windows only, so that's a bit of a caveat, but there are other tools out there. But in this case, you can just see how you could have an activity potentially where students zoom in on a tree and cut out that portion of the LIDAR data, and they can kind of in real time explore the data, which is a really fun and exciting way to get to know a different type of data. And then slide 43 is just an example activity, and this is one that we're working on for our workshop this summer. Just understanding the difference between an estimate of, say, biomass or tree height from a sensor like LIDAR compared to something you would measure with your hands on the ground. And so what does that mean? What does that comparison mean? And how do you actually perform that analysis in something like, say, R? And so this might be an example type of analysis where the students might do a regression. But before doing that regression, they need to understand where all the data come from and what the data really mean. And so that's a key part of that particular activity that we want to make sure is just very clear in the workshop. So kind of summarizing this just once again, slide 44, this online learning map where you'd have these different modular pieces that are multimedia and graphic, say videos, components that make up videos, and then some kind of data analysis activity that allows actual application of the concepts and actual working with the data in open source tools in like R to support the concepts learned in the videos. And then some kind of wrap-up, all of those pieces being put together to make some kind of classroom lab or activity that could be used in the classroom, or all those pieces being used however someone might want to use them. And slide 45, again, everything will be available on our portal as it's being developed. We don't have our educator portal just yet. We are still working on our website and our data portal, but that's what's coming in the future. And then slide 46, a big piece of this is that we want community input. So, for example, the videos that I'm creating now, I've been working with faculty across the country that are focused on particular topics, say LIDAR data, to actually review the science content and make sure that it's right. Because we don't want to just put things out there and assume that what we're doing is what the community wants or is the current information out there in the community. So there's a review process. And we're also really open to external contribution, and that would be make our materials even better. So trying to figure out a way, at some point we're going to put together a working group to try to get more of that community input to make sure we're just not creating a bunch of resources, but we want it to be a community-driven process. And slide 47, these are just some of the folks that have been helping me with the LIDAR videos through review and providing data snippets and input. And so that's been a really fun process for me to get to work with scientists and faculty across the country. I've really enjoyed that part, and hopefully I'll get to work with some of you in the future. And slide 48, just what we're moving towards. Those videos, at some point, I will hope to share some of that with you guys as it's being developed. But we also have a workshop that has been planned for 2014 at ESA, and that's that LIDAR data workshop that I mentioned earlier. So I'm really excited about that, to see what kind of input we get and feedback on this process. And that's it, slide 49. My email is there and my Twitter handle. I welcome any questions or comments, and please feel free to get in touch with me in the future if you have any ideas or input or feedback. Thank you.
That's wonderful, Leah. Thanks so much for this.
Sure.
Any questions, please?
Leah, this is Marta. Okay.
Hi, Marta.
We just met really briefly at AGU, and you're in Boulder, so I will ask you lots offline. But my question is, I was called off just for a second, so you may have already covered this, and I just missed it.
Sure.
When the portals, when the access to the data sets is organized for people to use, our experience, we're working on a project with NOAA and that have commissioned artists and faculty members at the University of Colorado to create new work with data sets that will be on Science on a Sphere, but they're more from an artistic point of view, believing that perhaps through metaphors and storytelling and, you know, other kind of artistic devices that people may become more empathic to the climate change and sustainability issues. And what we found is that when the artists try to access all kinds of data sets that are available, which are so great, it's really hard for them because they don't know the science. And so this long preamble is just to say that, is there a way for people to access the information with a question rather than an answer? And what I mean by that is that the way typically that one can access data sets is that there's an assumption that people already know that X data sets will give you this kind of information. You know what I mean? So I don't know. And also my guess is that people that are, you know, that are coming up K-12 and not as knowledgeable, maybe university students, would have that same kind of a dilemma. So I don't know if there's a way to access it so that you can do it by question.
That's a great comment and question, Marta. And I don't have the full answer, but I can give you a partial start of an answer. And I would love to talk to you more about it. A few things that we're thinking about with the portal. One is on our website, we're contemplating our data following according to what we're calling science themes. So things like, say, ecohydrology or atmosphere. And then within those science themes, we envision a series of questions. And we're actually just developing this right now. The idea for these themes is that some data sets would be kind of tagged with a particular theme that might allow people to digest, because we're going to have hundreds of different types of data products. But the idea of the themes is kind of that question-based approach where you could go into, say, ecohydrology and say, oh, I'm interested in nitrogen, or maybe there's particular specific questions, and we're going back and forth on how to do that right now. But that there would be that option to kind of enter our data through a science theme approach as opposed to here's a bunch of data. You need to kind of know what you want coming in. So that's one thing that we're exploring. And the other thing that we're exploring but we're not going to be able to implement for some time is just various visualization options where we could take topics that are identified by the community, like, say, phenology, that are really of interest to the broader community and provide some kind of tool where the data could be explored visually so that you could come in with a question and have a visual interface as opposed to having to download it and kind of know what you're looking for. Those are things that are going to be down the road only because we're so early in the construction phase of our portal. But, boy, I really welcome input and ideas because that's something we're grappling with right now.
Great. So I'll connect you. There's an artist, actually, Natalie Jeremijenko, who was recently profiled in the New York Times, who's totally brilliant. And she's working on a phenological clock. So definitely we'll talk. And I have to go off, but I just want to thank you so much. So I'll connect later. Thanks. Bye.
Sounds great, Marta. Thank you.
I have a related question, if I can. One of the things that I noticed in the presentation is a focus on university, and I'm assuming that's simply part of your your job description, essentially. In the group that are focusing on K-12?
Yes.
Or is this primarily from a university education level?
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to add to that a little bit, just the notion that And this is something that's come up when, you know, we've been reviewing climate change education materials. The expectations of educators at a university, certainly undergrad, graduate level, what materials will look like is quite different than what a K-12 educator will expect. And I mean, just by my sense of what you're producing here, this would really be very difficult for a K-12 educator to pick up very quickly and to incorporate into their classroom. And I'm just curious whether that's a part of the overall mandate of the project, is to look at ways to make this easier for K-12 or, you know, middle school, high school teachers to use. So this is somewhat similar to Marta's question around artist use and non-science use of these data sets.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I just want to make sure I emphasize that I'm absolutely biased because of my position, and I'm developing the university program. But with that said, Liz Gehring is the other senior educator here, and she has more of a K-12 program focus. And so that's in her realm, and I'd be happy to connect you with her. The other part of NEON that's much more K-12 focused is our citizen science program. Mm-hmm. And we have online professional development that's called Project Budburst. And yep. there are programs associated with that. And so those areas are absolutely being developed. It's just that my focus happens to be this other aspect. But it's equally important.
Excellent. I figured that.
Leah, this is Bonnie Murray. I have a follow-up question to that.
Please.
Sure. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. I work at NASA Langley Research Center. I work on the NICE project, and
okay.
We do a monthly series called Ask NICE. And last month, we featured the GLOBE Budburst program in the Ask NICE series. So I was actually thinking about that and how we use data collection as part of our instruction on climate change. And I'm wondering if there's anywhere in your materials that you actually talk about the satellite data collection process. I saw you had information about LIDAR and that, but that might be a place where we can tie this together.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. So just to clarify, you featured Project Budburst and the GLOW project last week.
I did.
You have Sandra. Okay, cool.
We had Jessica Taylor, who does a lot of work with GLOBE at NASA Langley Research Center.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see the recordings if you go onto YouTube and Google Ask NICE.
Okay.
The recordings for all the ones that we've done are on there, so you can see exactly what we were doing with Budburst there.
Wonderful. Okay, I'll definitely look into that. Absolutely. So far I haven't put anything together on satellite, but my background is remote sensing, specifically airborne remote sensing. And given that we have this platform, that's been where I've kind of started my development, only because it's a content area I'm familiar with, and I'm trying to figure out the process of what we need to develop. So, boy, if there's any opportunity to connect or collaborate surrounding that topic, I would love to talk to you more.
Okay, that sounds great. Let's just plan to talk offline, maybe, because I also would like to be connected to your K-12 person, because that's really our focus. But again, we're doing this once
sure.
a month with the various projects in the NASA Innovations in Climate Education. So I think there's great possibility for collaboration there.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to connect you with Liz, who's our K-12, and then also Sandra is the director of Project Budburst. So I'd be happy to make those connections.
That would be great. Okay.
Excellent. Any other questions for Leah?
I have just a comment. This is Carol Mandrick. And
yeah. Hi, Carol.
Leah, you might not be personally responsible for all these wonderful things, but I just want to say I am really, really impressed with the thoroughness and the carefulness of the planning of this whole thing and how much everything's covered, and I was even being like, wow, I love this slide. I love that slide. But in particular, like, I really like slide 15. I like slide 18. I like the way things are visualized and conceptualized and the little gear things, which I think just really helps a lot in terms of seen how all the things fit together. I just loved it. And I was totally impressed with the fact that, I have to try to remember this now, something about we're not just giving them data. We need for them to understand where the data come from in order for them to understand what it means. And I was like, yes, yes, yes. So anyway, however much you're, you know, responsible for any of this, congratulations. And if you're not, you're really lucky you got to work in a place like that. I'm just really impressed with the whole thing.
Oh, thank you so much.
That's great.
And now I'm going to zip out and try to go watch that talk from D.C. So
yes,
thanks, everybody. Bye.
Thank you, Carol.
That may be a good segue for us. Are there any other questions for Leah for right now? Because obviously we've got her email, and certainly I'm sure she's open to communications from any of us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Any other comments? If not, some of us, I think, are going to switch over to the other program on Climate Nexus. And I just want to thank Leah again. Thank you so much for doing this. I think there's going to be some interesting things come out of all of this. This is going to be a very interesting project for all of us to watch and be engaged in. So thanks
Great.
Again.
Great. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, everyone.
Yes.
I really look forward to talking to you more in the future.
Yes. Thank you, Leah. I look forward to talking with you as well. Thank you, Scott, for hosting.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. Bye now.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye now.